Part 3. Justice. Chapter 41. Ottawa, Illinois, 1933. The executives of the Radium Dial Company had had confirmed knowledge of radium poisoning since at least 1925, less than 3 years after their studio first opened in Ottawa. That was the year Marguerite Carlo first filed suit in New Jersey and Martland devised his tests. The executives had read CARES studies, attended the radium conference, and seen the Evan Byers story. They knew radium was dangerous. When their employees had found out about the New Jersey cases in 1928, the company had lied. There was a full-page advertisement in the paper. The girls are safe. Their medical exams prove it. The paint is safe, for it is pure radium only. When Peg Looney died, the company lied. There was no visible indication of radium poisoning, but only because her jawbone was no longer visible to anyone, having been cut from her after death. With these assurances plastered across the papers, the company had been supported by the town. After all, the executives had promised they would close the studio if there was any danger. No wonder the town was behind them when they took such good care of their employees and were willing to put people before profits. It must be really, really safe to work there, everyone thought. For 8 years on from Marguerite's lawsuit, Radium Dial was still trading daily in the little town of Ottawa. "Oh no," the local doctor said. It was definitely not radium poisoning that Catherine Wolfe Donohue had. She limped out of the consulting room, still no wiser as to the cause of her illness, and made her slow way home to East Superior Street. She was not alone. She pushed a stroller in which lay her baby son, Tommy, born in April 1933, just over a year after she'd married Tom Donohue. "God has sure blessed me," Catherine wrote, "with a grand husband and a lovely child." She and Tom had been married on 23rd of January 1932 in St. Columba. It was a modest wedding with only 22 guests. Catherine's uncle and aunt had both passed away by then, and Tom's family did not approve of the union. As their niece Mary remembered it, "None of Tom's family wanted him to marry her, because they saw her as not being in good health." But Tom Donohue adored Catherine Wolfe, and it was a love match. He married her no matter what his relatives said. The Donohues seemed to have come around to the idea by the time the vows were exchanged. Tom's brother Matthew was the best man, while his twin sister Marie also attended. The local paper deemed it one of the prettiest weddings of the midwinter season. As Catherine had limped down the aisle to marry Tom, dressed in a green crepe gown and with a bouquet of tea roses clutched in her hands, she'd thought, despite her hobbling steps, that she had never felt so well, a feeling topped when they'd then been blessed with Tommy. If it wasn't for her declining health, she would be on top of the world. Today's appointment had been the third doctor she'd consulted, but he was as uninformative as the rest. "They were just guessing," commented one dial painter's relative about the town's physicians. "They had no idea what the trouble was, especially any doctors in Ottawa." It was certainly true that the local physicians, perhaps as a result of the isolation of the tiny town, were not the most knowledgeable. Some of their cluelessness was apparently due to ignorance, despite the fact that by this time Dr. Martland had published many articles on radium poisoning. As an example, one Ottawa doctor, a former physician of Peg Looney as it happened, had recently stated, "It has never been brought to my attention that the use of luminous paint could in any way be responsible for the production of sarcoma." Whether it had been brought to their attention or not, Ottawa doctors were now seeing peculiar conditions in former Radium Dial girls. Sadie Prey had had a big black lump on her forehead. She died back in December 1931 of pneumonia, her death certificate said. Ruth Thompson had supposedly passed from tuberculosis.